Welcome to BA Academy's Voice of the Community podcast series, where we bring project teams closer together to talk about learnings, current trends, insights, and observations. We bring valuable content to the community, one practitioner at a time. Thank you for joining me for our sixth episode of Voice of the Community. I'm your show host, Laura Patton, and today we have the pleasure of being joined by David Mantica. Currently, Dave is the VP and General Manager for SoftEd US, a leading provider of transformational training services helping to support companies in adopting agile methods. David has an impressive portfolio of goal-driven successes. He has over 20 years of product manager experience and over 15 years of business owner and executive experience. Overall, David has 23 years of business-to-business services, consulting, coaching, and training experience in the roles of operations, service delivery, marketing, and product and executive management. Just recently, he successfully sold his B2B training firm, having taken it from a $1.2 million company in 2005 to a $13 million company by 2013. From a public speaking perspective, Dave has delivered over 400 presentations to over 15,000 professionals, and he has been the product manager or executive sponsor in the design, development, and go-to-market strategy for over 350 training courses. If you've never had an opportunity to hear David speak, you have missed a dynamic, engaging speaker. But that's okay, because he's here today with us to talk about a pretty intriguing topic, something he calls Likenomics. And so with no further delay, let's get talking with David Mantica. Welcome, David, and thank you very much for being part of this podcast. I was actually thinking about trying to figure out how long you and I have actually known each other.
Yeah, probably close to like 10 years, 10 to
10 plus years.
Yeah, yes. Met in the Raleigh marketplace as it related to doing business analysis work and supporting the chapter, and you looking at your business analysis career when I was working at ASP.
Right. And then our paths keep crossing. And, yeah. And we just met up at the professional development day for PMI in Raleigh. And that was really cool to meet up with you. And so here we are having a conversation. So really, thank you for taking time out of your schedule.
Oh, no problem. And I thought your topic was phenomenal related to the future of business analysis and really looking at the BA being an out-of-project resource around defining value. And that's a great direction that the business analyst needs to be looking at going to for the future.
Definitely. And I didn't know if I even really explained my objective on this podcast, but I kind of over the summer got this idea that I was seeing less and less opportunity that organizations were sending their staff to conferences. And I also was seeing that a lot of busy professionals aren't finding time to go to their chapter events, unfortunately. So I wanted to just try to bring the community together in a different way for people to hear from great practitioners and experienced professionals like yourself. And so it's just called Voice of the Community. And I just thought it'd be kind of fun to get different names together and have conversation and allow other people to hear from people that have accomplished some things or have some things to share and learn. And it's really open to anybody, but that was the whole premise for creating this. So,
well, that's a phenomenal premise. There's no doubt that folks are having a more difficult time trying to keep up with trends and keep up with the changes in the marketplace. And a podcast is definitely a very powerful tool that lets people learn on their own time related to their schedule. So thank goodness you're doing that.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm learning as we go too. So be patient. No, I know you will. So your topic today, Likenomics and Influence, Survival Skills for the 21st Century Knowledge Worker. You did a presentation on this.
Yes, I did.
Recently, yes. And it has a catchy title because what is Likenomics? So I'm going to start there. Probably the most obvious question is having you define that. What do you mean by Likenomics?
Yeah, it's a great question, right? So the concept of Likenomics is basically this. There's a fundamental truth out there in business and in our own personal lives. We like to build relationships and we like to do business with people we like. Sorry, I said like three times, but it's a reinforcer. The simple metric of likability powers everything from who we believe to what we buy. And you start thinking about this, it's really true. It's the whole concept of the micro communities within the internet and the fact that we want to be surrounded by like-minded people who believe in the things that we believe in, and we connect with those folks. And so Likeonomics is about the concept of being likable, but the key element of this is simply not being nice. Likeonomics is not equal to just being nice. There's a lot more inside of Likeonomics than, again, that word nice.
So Likeonomics, as you just explained it, because when I first saw it, I thought you were talking about maybe how we would put an actor or a sports figure up on a pedestal and like them, but this is different. It's
a lot. Yeah, a lot different. So one example of this is think about at work. You're a busy professional, you're at your desk. This same person comes to you on a continuous basis, sits down at your desk and starts talking to you. Two things are happening. One, they're talking to you about things that are not very relevant. And then two, they're not noticing that you're busy. This person might be the nicest person in the world, but you do not like this person. You would not pick this person for a project. You would not necessarily go out of your way to help this person. And it's not because they're not nice. It's because of some other attributes that they're doing that makes them less likable. And that's when you start looking at our interactions. We don't realize sometimes that we're doing things that allow us not to connect with people the way we should be.
Interesting. Does the personality style play into this?
Not necessarily. You could be a type A or a type B person and have Likeonomic issues. I mean, type A people, you know, might be more outgoing and want to communicate more, but they may have these same attributes. The same thing with a introverted person may communicate less, but when they communicate or when they engage, they may be engaging, doing things that they shouldn't be doing that negatively affect their likability.
Would we use Likeonomics then to try to understand how to better communicate with people?
Exactly. So why this topic to me is so important for business analysts and anybody in the SDLC is because number one, communication is the critical success factor in any type of project success, right? So you use Likeonomics to be able to get things to happen and influence outcomes better, because most of us in the SDLC do not have the power of the positional authority to make things happen that way. So we have to make things happen through influence. And we can only be influential when we build a relationship, and most of those relationships goes back to being likable.
That's really interesting. So we know as business analysts and project managers how hard it can be to lead a team or to get people to follow a process that we need to get through to get some objective or deliverable completed. And we always say how tough that is because we're having to lead, but we don't have authority.
Exactly.
So now you're identifying something that we could be conscious of, something that we could be aware of to try to, as a tool almost, or a skill.
Exactly. That's the big thing is that most business analyst professionals have to use a referent or referent power base. So you have the informational power base, you have the expert power base, you have the positional power base, you have a coercive power base. And now a lot of those power bases are fleeting. The informational power base is only as good as information you have. The expert power base is only as good as your expertise and how long that expertise has value. The coercive power base may last a short period of time, but then it becomes caustic. The referent power base is your ability to influence and make things happen. And to do that, you have to connect. And so when you start looking at Likeonomics, there are five attributes there that need to be in the toolkit for an SDLC professional. The first thing is truth. The second is relevance. The third is unselfishness. The fourth is simplicity. And the fifth is timing. So if we go back to that example I was talking about with the person coming to your desk, and a lot of times they're coming to your desk, they're not understanding timing appropriately. Your head's down, you're working on something, they're sitting down, they're taking up your time, they don't even ask if this is a good time, so they're not reading the situation appropriately. Now, going back to your introvert example, one of the things that introverts may do is they may not communicate a lot, but when they do communicate in smaller groups, they might not be relevant. So it's very important in the SDLC to keep the conversations relevant. There's so much complexity that if you're talking about going down a certain path that has a 5% possibility of occurring, and you're spending 30 minutes of a 45-minute meeting talking about that, you're not relevant. I don't want to work with somebody who is not going to be relevant to what we have to get accomplished that day. So those are a couple of examples of some of these five elements of the trust formula.
Can you go through the five again? I was listening engrossed in the conversation, but I think it'd be important for anybody that wanted to note those down. So timing, yeah. Relevancy.
Yeah, so the first is truth. So being as truthful and direct as possible. And I liking this to the Emperor Robe story, Hans Christian Andersen, the emperor who got swindled by the two swindlers and they didn't make a robe for him. And everybody said, oh, you have this beautiful robe. And he was naked. And it took a little boy to point out and laugh and say, well, you've got nothing on. So a lot of times people are going to tell you what they think you want to hear or what they want you to know.
A lot of times in business, right?
Exactly.
That is at the top of the list.
Exactly. Okay. So I want somebody around me who's going to be direct and forthcoming and still be respectful. The next is relevance. So relevance is a critical thing in the SDLC because there's so much craziness going on. You got to stick to the point. You got to get that piece done before you go on to the next piece, before you go on to the next piece. Even though that sounds waterfallish, even in an iterative project, you still have that time box that you're working in to get that specific thing done. And that has to stay relevant or you're not going to make that time box. The next is unselfishness. You know, you could be a great motivational speaker. You can be a great strategist, but if people start sniffing around that you're influencing for your own purposes, you're using the referent power base maybe to increase your position in the company, to get a raise, people are not going to connect with you. And it's going to be a false sense of influence. The next, which I think is the second most powerful thing in the SDLC, is simplicity. It's so complex, like I've been talking about, that sometimes you have to at least let people see the vision. You know, what is it we're trying to accomplish? And this is a real big issue for likability as it relates to sponsors. A lot of business analysts particularly will start digging into the details of something when they're talking to a sponsor, and the sponsor really doesn't want to know the details. They want to know the outcome. What is the outcome and what are the risks? So I don't want to know how the sausage is made. That's your job. Tell me about the outcomes and the risk, and I'll ask you questions to explain how it occurs if I think I need to ask that. Nine times out of 10, the business analyst will start weaving in all the things about how the sausage is made, which will make it less simple, and then they'll lose the sponsor. And that also ties back to relevance. And the last thing, and I think the timing is a thing for life, whether it's, you know, dating, whether it is looking for a new job, whether it is communicating with your boss or communicating with your significant other or life partner. Timing is really important. There are times when you talk about things and there's times when you don't talk about things. One example of this is when I am in a difficult mood, I'm not going to have a difficult conversation with an employee. I'm not going to have a difficult salary negotiation, or I'm not going to take the time. I'm not going to take that time at that point to do some type of conflict management because the timing isn't right. I'm in a bad mood. It's just going to make things worse. So having the understanding to judge what you do when you do it is a timing thing. Is something that is critically important, not just for SDLC professionals, but in life in general.
I love the list. I feel it's really actionable. We could take that and think through each one and try to understand how it applies to our position within a product team. And what competency popped into my head when you were speaking was self-awareness. I feel that would play a big part in making this happen, right?
Yeah, underneath all this economics, so one of the things I talk about is a professional skills pyramid. And I know a lot of times we'll talk about professional skills as it relates to generic communication skills or generic presentation skills. I think that there's a base of five elements. And that very first element is a thing called emotional intelligence. And there's four levels of emotional intelligence: self-understanding and self-awareness, situational understanding, and situational awareness. And I think you're so right in saying the first step for anybody is to understand and analyze and review yourself and make judgments about yourself. And then if you understand that, you can start looking at yourself in the context of how you interact. And one of the best things to do to check yourself is to pick a person that you don't quite connect with, look at those five elements and see which one of those five elements you're breaking as it relates to the lack of connection with that person that you're having problems with.
I love that. So it's an internal look first before going out, and I'm going to move into judgmental behavior then. You talk about something called cognitive biases. So you're giving them this list and you're saying the first step is to look inward to see how you would assess or rate yourself. But now let's talk about because I think we're all guilty of having cognitive biases when we meet somebody. So can you tie that into this conversation?
Yeah, that's a really good thing. And so one of the things I talk about when I do this presentation is that you can't change somebody else. The first thing you can, the only thing you can change is yourself, and then you can change the reaction to somebody else. So when we talk about the Likeonomics piece, the first thing we were doing was talking about trying to change yourself. Now, what you want to talk about is this idea of our brain and work. And our brain is not set up for white collar work. It's just not. Most of the information goes through the limbic part of our brain first before it gets to our cortex and our cerebral cortex. And that limbic part of the brain really works on the run, fight, or freeze mentality. So you always have this first response, and that's to react in a, you know, in a physical or an emotional scenario. And that's why you start seeing a lot of distress. So what I talk about next is you have to understand some of the weaknesses of the brain and white collar work, and then you can react appropriately to somebody. You're not going to change them with these techniques, but you're going to react appropriately. And these cognitive dissonances are things like the endowment effect and loss regret and social proof and retroactivity and confirmation bias. And we can talk about each one. And one of the things that I talk about in those is, hey, when you're connecting with somebody and you're seeing something that's not logical, see if they're matching into one of these cognitive distortions. And if they are, then you might want to change the way you're communicating with them to get away from that distortion.
Wow, this is much deeper than I expected. So take us through a couple of those. So you said endowment effect. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so I love the endowment effect. It's one of my most favorite ones. And when I'm doing a presentation, I'll look at somebody, I'll say, hey, I have this bright red shiny apple, and you have this bright red shiny apple. They're both Macintosh. They're the same size. They're the same weight. They're the same life, as in there's not one that's a little older than the other. Okay, so which apple is more valuable? And they're always going to pick their apple. The endowment effect says that what we own is more valuable than what somebody else owns. So as a business analyst professional, sometimes you'll see fights amongst the stovepiped organizations within a project, and you're frustrated. You're like, why isn't this person being so selfish? They're not. They're suffering from the endowment effect. The first thing is they have ownership of that area, so it's more valuable than somebody else's area. So you have to take that into consideration and adjust your conversation accordingly for them to be able to understand the value. One is make sure they understand that you know that they're valuable, that their organization is valuable. Then try to change the conversation to a value conversation so they can understand how maybe doing something for some of the other stovepipes will help them in their own community.
Wow, very interesting. Okay, so did you say regret aversion? Was that?
Yeah, so it's actually called loss regret aversion.
Okay.
And this one's insidious. So in the SDLC, one of the things we face is the fact that people don't like to change, and it drives us crazy. So projects are all about change. We're just constantly, you know, doing a new project to change something we've done before. Not because we all love to change, but if we don't change, we don't adapt. If we don't adapt, we can't compete. So with loss aversion, most human beings would rather do nothing than lose. So I would rather do nothing than end up losing than do something and have the possibility to win. So nice. You've got to understand that when you're dealing with your constituency, especially the people within the project or being affected by the project, and get them excited about the fact that one, the loss won't be that significant. There's not going to be a huge impact. And two, painting the picture of what success looks like so they can frame that up better. So they can get away from this idea of, I don't want to lose, I hate losing, to, well, if I lose, it's not going to be that bad. Oh, and look how much of a possibility there is to win.
So are these principles, how do you refer to these
characters? Well, they're called cognitive dissonances. What you want to be thinking about is the fact that our brains have, in the book, Thinking Slow and Fast by Daniel Kahneman, I think, is that the right pronunciation? He talks about the fact that our brain is this thing that is small but takes up 20% of the energy in the food of our bodies, which is a huge percentage difference compared to everything else. So in a lot of cases, our brains like to work on very stereotyped heuristic patterns. He calls it system one thinking. And it takes a lot of energy to push up to that system two thinking. Like you might be working on a really tough cognitive problem. And by the time you're done 3 or 4 hours, it felt like you ran a marathon, because in some ways you did, and you probably didn't feed your brain appropriately. So because we're doing a lot of this system one, you know, stereotypical patterns of thinking, we fall into these patterns of cognitive dissonance, where we keep doing these things consistently because our brain isn't pushing past and going to more deep system two thinking.
So can you tie this back to business analysis? And then maybe we could talk about what people can do that are listening at the conclusion. This is great information, very insightful, but I'm thinking, how do we apply it after the end of this podcast? Where do I even start? So yeah, maybe tie up these let's just say
cognitive dissonances.
Thank you. I'll let you say that. Tie that back to business analysis.
So when you look at a business analyst or business analysis work, it's really this translation job, right? You're translating the need of the business to the way something should be built from a technical standpoint, or maybe a non-technical standpoint, depending on whether you're doing business analysis for an operations process or a marketing process. But you got to go from what the need is to the expert who's going to make that need occur. Because you're this bridge, it's all about understanding people and communicating with people. And in order to communicate with people, you've got to understand the underlying issues associated with people working in an environment that we're not naturally suited for. So business analysts first have to understand that if they're going to be successful working with people, they have to be very influential. So to be influential, you have to be likable. So you have to be looking at those five characteristics of likability and check yourself. How relevant are you? Are you honest most cases and direct? Do you keep things simple, or do you go beyond the scope? Are you unselfish, and is it always about you, or do you try to support the person you're working with? And then are you smart in your timing? Yes, you've got to get a project done, but sometimes it just doesn't make sense to drive that project schedule down someone's throat just to get something done. And then 2 weeks later, when you got to work with that person, they're never going to talk to you again. So that's the first thing. The second thing is the business analyst has to understand that the person just isn't a jerk. And that's the first thing that happens when somebody's suffering from a cognitive dissonance. One of the cognitive dissonances is the confirmation bias, which is no matter what, person always thinks they're right. You could throw 1,000 different things at this person, but they're only going to see the things that pushes their point. So as a business analyst, if you're dealing with this person, you don't understand what's going on, you're just going to think they're a jerk, they're difficult to deal with. Right. When you see that it's a confirmation bias issue, there's a way you can stop and try to present the information in a different way and a more thoughtful way to get them to see and understand what's going on, to break through that confirmation bias. So I think it all ties back to how a business analyst engages the community. It's one thing to know how to elicit a requirement or write the language correctly or put into a requirements management system. It's another thing to actually work the community of people you have to work to get the right information to begin with.
Right. It's the soft skills, right? We've always said the underlying competencies are those characteristics or your skills and knowledge that help you become successful with the tactical stuff.
Correct.
So this stuff falls into that. But it was interesting as you were speaking. Well, first, the first thing that popped into my head as a BA is I see a checklist here somewhere.
with
everything that you've been sharing with us. But the second thing that I was thinking about is what's funny when we teach about communication and we're training a business analyst to be better at communication, what do we have in our course materials except looking outward to understand our stakeholders and their characteristics, which is still important. But I think what you were just sharing with us here is there's also an element here where we should be doing some looking at ourselves internally, not just what are the characteristics of my stakeholder, but what about me? What am I bringing to this equation?
I think it's huge. I think the emotional intelligence aspect of business analysis is critical. So it's one thing to tell you that you need to do a self-assessment. That's the first thing in emotional intelligence, to have the wherewithal to assess yourself. But then what am I assessing myself on? So what I would tell a business analyst is you're assessing yourself on your likability. And it's not about being nice. Assess yourself on these five elements. When you're in a conversation, how relevant are you? When you're talking to a sponsor, are you keeping it simple and direct? Or are you getting too deep into things that they don't care about? Are you timely in the fact that you're planning your conversations around somebody else's schedule? you know, ultimately, are you looking at something and being as unselfish as possible and not tying it always back to you? So I would have that checklist and be thinking about it. And the flip side is that before you judge somebody, see if they're suffering from one of these cognitive issues so that you can adjust the way that you communicate to them. And that's really a big part. And the last part I will tell from a business analyst perspective is the fact that a lot of times business analysts are working in a very large organization. They might be working with someone for the first time. So they have to be very, very, very understanding of the fact that you're getting judged. And people judge initially for two things, trust and competency. Mm-hmm. So I always liken this to evolution of the human brain. So we're out there as cave people, and I come across you, Laura, and I see you, and the first thing I'm looking at is, number one, can she hunt saber-tooth tiger and help me get saber-tooth tiger? And I say, oh yeah, Laura can do that. But then I'm thinking, well, after we get it, is she going to kill me and take the tiger for herself?
Right.
So, you know, what a business analyst has to do first and foremost is make sure that they are presenting themselves initially appropriately for the group they're communicating with, and then judge those five elements of Likeonomics into their continued conversation and relationship.
Okay. And I'll just let you know that I'm going to starve to death because I'm not going to be able to kill a tiger. So just let you know. So don't hang around me. You're going to go hungry.
I love that.
So all of these, this is really amazing. We don't hear enough about this type of material. I love it. Order of priority, or is there a way to say one is more important than the other, or they're just kind of all equally important?
No, that's an interesting one. I would tell you initially for a business analyst, the first thing is relevance and simplicity, because we know your world is extremely complex. So when you're talking to stakeholders, be as cognizant of the fact that they're interested in outcomes more than how you got the job done or the complexities of getting the job done. So keep it simple. So you're talking about, hey, we need this project done. What is the output? What's the value that's going to be created? What's the time scope? What's the risk factors, without getting into, oh yeah, but then Sally over here does this wrong, and then I got to work into Billy's group, and Billy's group does this, and blah, blah. They don't care. So keep in a conversation when it relates to a sponsor and a stakeholder at a higher level. Keep it simple to the point. And then when you're driving meetings, focus on relevancy. I mean, if you're a facilitator as a business analyst or an agile coach, your ability to keep the meeting relevant is going to be why someone brings you on as a facilitator for another meeting. You'll get really intelligent coaches who most people don't want them to lead another meeting because it was too many tangents, too many parking lots. We didn't get what we thought were done, what Sure. we thought we were supposed to get done. So those are the two things as a business analyst I would be looking at: simplicity and relevance. And then the third would be timing and being smart about when I'm engaging and how I'm engaging. Even though you have a schedule to meet, I mean, being unselfish sometimes means I might not make my schedule, but I can get the best information possible. Because for me as a business analyst, I'd rather get the best information to produce the best value instead of making my schedule.
Right. And of course, for BAs that take that stance, that's why BAs and PMs don't always get along.
Exactly.
And it's a good mix.
It's a good mix. But I say at the end of the day, any BA who might have a project manager upset with them, hey, I'm about value. And I think that's the BA's hat. The BA has the power to always put the trump card down as it relates to need and value. Hey, I'm the one that finds the need. Would you rather work on a project when I had the need right, or would you rather work on a project a year later that we missed the need and nobody's using it?
Sure. So I think what you're sharing with us is also valuable in building a better relationship with your project manager, and the project Yes. manager building a better relationship with their BA, not just
Absolutely.
Customer relationship. So we tend to find these characteristics out about our coworkers when we're on a project. So in your experience, and I know you've led a lot of teams and you've hired a lot of people, how can you tease this information out during an interview to make sure, you know, what do you do? How do you ask the questions?
That's a really good question. That's one I haven't received in a lot of my presentations lately. So when I look at hiring somebody, I'm not so fixated on their expertise, their experience. Mm-hmm. I want to know about their character, their intelligence, and their sociability. So first off, I'm going to ask them about themselves. I'm going to ask them to talk about themselves, to elaborate about themselves. And also, even before I do that, I'm going to do my best to try to get that person as comfortable as possible. Because the more comfortable you get somebody in the interview, the more of the foibles you're going to find. They're going to do things. Like, I've had multiple people in the interview swear, which you think that was a total faux pas, but they got so comfortable that they, you know, got back to their normal cadence and you can see things. So a lot of times we want to make someone very uncomfortable in the interview. I think that's oxymoronic. I think you get them comfortable, then you're going to be able to see the real person away from all the guys and the protectors that they're putting up for as part of the interview.
Funny.
So then the next step is your expertise will come. First, you want to look at their character. So now, what was your worst experience and how did you deal with that? What was your best experience and why was it the best experience and what did you learn from that? And did you have a difficult thing that you had to deal with in life and how did you deal with that? And did you overcome something? Or when you had the success, what did you do? How did you actualize that success? How did you celebrate that success? All these things will start digging into their character. Are they saying a lot of I's and me's around the success? Or they don't have they're having a very difficult time trying to find things that they did wrong. That means that there's character issues there that you want to be able to dig into. Seeing how they do timing wise, allowing you to speak, or are they talking over top of you, things of that nature as it relates to timing. If you ask a question, how relevant, how much did they stick to the point that you asked? So those are some of the ways that you can dig into it from an interview perspective.
Wow, I hope I never have to interview with you. Those are tough questions. Good information, though. These are the types of scenarios we should be playing out. And I think that is really good. And the reason I asked that question is because I have inherited a lot of teams over my career. And I know how hard it is when you get those folks that don't have these characteristics. And it starts with self-awareness. If they're not even aware that this is a situation, you're really struggling.
You really struggle. And that's the biggest problem with inheriting a team is that, you know, you're going to have to deal with some people that you probably would not have hired in the first place.
Yes.
And that could be a very big challenge. And that's a whole other conversation.
Right. And you have some folks that would be willing to learn or listen. But like I said, I always pull back to self-awareness because if they don't even have that, they're not even willing to have a conversation. So
exactly.
I always struggle in those scenarios.
I think the biggest mistake that people have is they hire an expertise before character. And most of the messed up cultures I ran into, they had a lot of talented people, but there was no cohesion. Mm-hmm. And you couldn't really work with the people to help them because they were just so wrapped around their expertise and they had no real interest in the underlying character issues, nor any concept that they had character issues.
I think it's because we don't drill into it and ask those scenario-based type questions and we're all tactical.
Yes.
Absolutely. Do you know how to elicit? How do you elicit? What techniques do you use? Same conversation over and over again. Can you
exactly.
Use your stories?
Yeah, and I would say before that, you know, can the person make somebody on the other side of the table comfortable enough to tell them the truth?
Yeah, yeah. Well, this was packed with really great, insightful, new concepts and information. Thank you for sharing it. Are there any parting words or do you want to summarize and lead us with any parting thoughts?
Well, first off, Laura, thank you very much. Thank you for interviewing me. Thank you for offering this up to the community. I would just say in general, the way the world is changing, your professional skills toolkit is so incredibly important. Your ability to solve problems, your ability to work in teams, your ability to get things done in the complexity, the mud, the messy mud of a company is so important. You not only know how to do something, you have to know how to get it done. And I think that's the missing link today is that we teach people how to do something. We don't teach people how to get it done. And I think that's really what I've been trying to push out there into the marketplace is learning how to get things done. You don't have to be the smartest person to get things done. You just have to be a person that understands how to work people.
Good. Very good. All right. Well, where can the community find you? What do you have planned for the rest of the year? Are you going to be doing any more conferences?
Yeah. So I check us out at softed.com. I'll be doing some presentations and some web seminars through Softed. I don't have anything scheduled this year at this point in time, but I'm hopeful to add some stuff in my schedule in the near future. And certainly if you type in my name, David Manica, you'll find a lot of the recorded sessions on a lot of these topics that I've spoken about in the past.
Very good. Well, this was fun. I really enjoyed it. I'm going to also, as I put this up on the page, if you have any additional outside information that you want to share for people to get do more reading or check out some books that you probably have read over your career in this space. I think people would be very interested to learn more about this. So please share them.
All right. Thanks, Laura. I'll do that.
All right. Thanks. Have a great day.
You have a great day as well. Thank you very much.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.